All right, you're now tuned in to the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 237, an embarrassing loss in the Valley of the Sun. What the hell is Philly going to do with Harden? And Pat Beverly gets to go to ESPN and spill all his tea about his feelings about Chris Paul. It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew. Drew, kick that intro music. What up, podcast world?
What's up, everybody?
You know what it is. You know where you're at. It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 237. We had a magical day yesterday. Today is Monday. We had two game sevens yesterday. We're going to break down both those games. But first, Drew is living the Tahoe life for the next 3 weeks.
That's right.
He's been struggling with internet. It took us about an hour to get this going today. I'm looking at his background, and it's just a bunch of masks. I don't know. I don't know what this is. What's going on here? Who decorated the crib, Drew?
Well, so it's funny. I probably should know more about this room that I'm sitting in right now. I from my memory, and I'll have to get this confirmed by my wife. But this room is the den to the downstairs area of the house here in Tahoe. What you can't see is I'm looking out two beautiful windows at the mountains and the lake. So I have a nice view. But within this room, which is where I had to sleep as a young man.
Oh, boy.
When I was in high school, I slept alone in this room. It was terrifying. For those that won't be able to see this, there are individual masks tacked onto the wall. And when I say masks, these aren't your normal like Halloween masks. These are all foreign masks that have been collected over decades by Casey's grandparents and family members and accumulated in this room. They're all from all over the country, all over the world. And the majority of them are fucking terrifying.
Oh, I'm right now shaking in my boots. I want you to get up and move spots, actually. It would make
it's not happening. I mean, there's two couches, both couches have direct mask backgrounds. There's nothing I can do. It has made my work, my actual day job, a little tricky because I've been having to blur myself out of the background for the Zoom calls for the job. Be like, oh, it brings up too many weird questions. It's like, where are you and why are you in this space? But needless to say, yeah, if you enjoy Game of Thrones, which is something you brought up before the podcast, this would be your favorite room. This is like the many-faced god.
The Hall of Many Faces. It's freaking me out. Either way.
Yeah.
Today is Monday. I don't think it's going to be a surprise. The name of this podcast is going to be the Luka Special, because that's just everything that everybody's been talking about. I cannot believe what happened yesterday. Like, I'm not shocked that the Mavericks won the series. I'm shocked at how Phoenix lost the series. Okay. Yep. And this is, there's so much to unpack with this series and Phoenix losing, but it was the way they went about it. It's Jason Kidd out coaching the coach of the year. It's the Dallas Mavericks and their team that's put together full of really good basketball players, no superstars except for Luka, right? And then just this team that's well coached and led by a superstar. And you know what, Drew, like, playoffs is where good players become great, right? It's like, it's your breakout. It's how you break out into becoming a superstar. We saw it, you know, Michael Jordan had it at the Garden when he dropped 60. We're seeing it happen in front of our eyes with Tatum and Luka, and who I think are at that level now, right? We've been waiting for Tatum and waiting for Luka to get out of the first round. And, you know, he did it yesterday in a fashion where it was like, did Phoenix even know that it was game seven? Back against the wall. This is your best shot of winning an NBA championship. And D-Book was horrific. Chris Paul was horrific. And we're going to have the Chris Paul conversation here in a minute. So it's either, do you think it was Phoenix playing horribly or Luka and the Mavs just coming out and destroying everything that Phoenix had worked so hard for this year? I mean, Luka was getting to the rack, no problem. Ayton got benched. Your future $150 million man. Why? And Monty says it was because it was internal. Like, let us know why you benched him. That's what he said. It's internal. I want to know why DeAndre Ayton was benched. I want to know why, you know, Mikal Bridges, the runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year, is getting cooked by Luka Doncic. And let's not let Spencer Dinwiddie, like, this is why they brought Spencer Dinwiddie in, right? I don't see Porzingis being able to do anything near what Spencer Dinwiddie did yesterday. And for all intents and purposes, I don't know what's going to happen in the next round. We're going to make our predictions. But look, Luka's here. Luka's arrived. And you can just see that, you know, he wanted it more than that whole basketball team. What was your take on the game, Drew?
Yeah, I don't really have a way to evaluate what I saw correctly. I want to give Luka a lot of credit for everything he did, and I want to give Dinwiddie a lot of credit, and the Mavs and their defense, which has been the unsung hero throughout this entire playoffs, is their defense is actually not as bad as we're all used to it being. Mm-hmm. But before I can weigh that in any form, I need to know what the fuck happened to the Suns. Like, as good as Luka and Spencer and the Mavs were, how can you evaluate what we just witnessed? I don't understand it. And Clips, I'll go further. This was the weirdest ending to the majority of the series. Like, all four series had really fucking weird endings. Now, not as weird as this, but we saw the Warriors get wiped up by 50 points. The Heat took care of business quite easily against the Sixers. And then we have a 40-point blowout in this one. And even in the game before that, the Boston-Milwaukee game, that one wasn't that close in the second half. There's something in the air, and I don't know what it is. But if we have a meteorologist that we can reach out to, or an astrologist, an astronomer, where is Mars? Are the planets aligned in a very strange pattern? Like, what is happening? Because none of it makes any sense to me why the Warriors would lose by 50 points, why the Suns at home, best record in the NBA, best team in the NBA all year long, would come out flatter than me singing. Like, it is the worst. I don't have any words or evaluations other than congratulations to the Dallas Mavericks for showing up to play a basketball game at the time that they were expected to be playing. I think this kind of collapse makes everyone second guess, like, why is Monty Williams the coach of the year? Why do we value Chris Paul and Devin Booker so highly? And then all of that, where is DeAndre Ayton? Is he even worth $100 million? Who wants him on his team on their team next year? Like, it's amazing how one performance like this forces you to reanalyze all of, I mean, at least for me, I've had to reanalyze all of my thoughts about the Phoenix Suns. And I don't have any answers yet. I haven't come up with jack shit other than the fact that this was a catastrophe. It's been perhaps the worst loss that I can think of in like a game seven. Like, if you're favored game seven, I can't recall a team losing like this, maybe ever.
Yeah, I think the one word you're looking for, first of all, I work with a girl and she told me that there's something going on with the moon. So it could be astrology related.
Oh, there was like a super, super duper moon recently.
But, you know, whatever. We're not going to blame it on the moon. The word to describe it is embarrassing, man. And you know, I love this. I love the fact that Phoenix lost. I told you last night on our text. I'm like, if for people that listen to us, we have a phrase called tight buttholes, right? Yes. Tight buttholes just means, and this is the epitome of what it means, is people do not show up to play in big moments then when the lights are on, right? And Devin Booker, who, you know, I personally, because of his beef he's had with Paul George, I haven't liked him. I voted him on my All-NBA team, but I think he's soft in a lot of ways. I went into a rabbit hole today looking at all Devin Booker's fights and who he's been in with, and his favorite phrase is calling people soft, right? That's what he called Paul George. That's what he screamed at Jalen Brunson, the smallest guy on the court, called him soft. And if you watch any of these previous games after the first two games, Devin Booker's getting bodied by Jalen Brunson, you know, chest into the sternum type shit. And what he looked like was soft. The thing that bugs me, Drew, that pisses me off, because you know I love Chris Paul, and we're going to talk about him in 1 second. It's the fact that CP is 4 for 8 field goals in a game 7. 8 fucking field goals. Devin Booker, 3 for 14. They weren't going in at all. At least he was getting his shots up and whatnot. DeAndre Ayton, 2 for 5 field goals. 5 points. 10 points from CP. 11 from Devin Booker. Minus 41 for Booker. Minus 39 for Chris Paul. And you would think that Chris Paul knows the narrative, man. Knows what everybody says about him. James Harden knows what everybody says about him. And me being the guy that loves Chris and was I was rooting for Dallas, but I have a thing for Chris Paul and wanting him to win a championship. We all know this. But I'm going to have to face a couple facts regarding Chris Paul here in a second. I just felt that I thought it was so beautiful the way Luka, after game 5, when Phoenix wins, and you see him going to the locker room and saying, you know what, everybody acts tough when they're up. And that's so true, bro. And then this 22-year-old fucking beast of a basketball player puts the whole team on his back, drops 27 points in the first half, the same amount of points that the whole Phoenix Suns team had. And he's smiling and smirking after everything. Like, yeah, bro. Yeah, I got this. Yeah, keep talking your shit. Step back threes, giving it to him every which way, taking it to the rack. And then Dinwiddie going off, of course, is a huge thing. But I posted on our page, I thrive off the tears of Devin Booker, right? When he went to Instagram and said, yo, this is the Luka special. Well, again, dude, you just got Luka special. This is the best team in the NBA all season, man. And also, like, Drew, here's a good one. If the playoffs were built for any basketball player in today's game, it's built for Luka Doncic. Slow down. You get to see a team 5-6 times, right? The real greats, the Kobes, the Michaels, they it's chess to them, right? And once you figure that shit out, Chris Paul couldn't get his shots, his 15-foot elbow shots, which he's made his whole career on. They figured it out. He couldn't get any of those. And it's that defensive strategy. It's the fact that Bullock and Finney-Smith were up in their nuts the whole game. That's what was the most impressive to me. And then we posted the video of Jason Kidd on that one defensive play on when they were on defense. And now you see it. Now you see why J. Kidd is so good. And why are we talking more about J. Kidd than we are the coach of the year in Monty Williams, right? I don't want to hear the Booker talk anymore. I don't, because if he put up 25 shots, Drew, and tried his fucking hardest, I'd be actually fine with the loss. If Chris Paul put up 20 shots and missed every single one of them, I'd be fine with that. It's an off night. It's kind of like the Bucks yesterday, right? Like, they were trying, shit wasn't falling. 4 for 33s or whatever. But what does this mean now? What does this mean for the Phoenix Suns? What does this mean for DeAndre Ayton? And then what do you think this means moving forward, going into the next series with the Warriors?
Well, the first thing is I feel robbed of a fantastic Suns-Warriors series. I feel robbed of that. I was very much looking forward to those two teams kind of battling it out, the two teams that I thought were the strongest remaining in the West. Chris Paul's legacy continues to take hits, even though he achieved something last year that I don't think any of us expected, by getting to the finals and almost pulling off a championship win. And then this year, again, you know, a lot of people were like, the Suns will be good, but not too many had them as the number one overall team in the NBA. And yet they overachieve again. And we're sitting here up 2-0, the Suns are, going back to Dallas, looking like they're a different class. The Suns looked like a different class, like a JV team, like a varsity team playing against a JV team those first two games. Didn't look close. And then something happened, bro.
The flex happened, dog.
It was Chris Paul's 37th birthday. And really, it was like since game 2. Just, he was no longer the Chris Paul that we saw all year for his whole career. I mean, I guess some people would say this is the real Chris Paul. Like, the Chris Paul haters would say this is the real Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. you know, when it's on the line, when it matters, like da 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 da, this is what happens, which sucks because I'm also a Chris Paul fan, just like you are, and I don't want to hear that about him because he's such a good, unbelievable player. But you, I mean, how can you ignore it now? You can't ignore it when he has four games in a row, which are just quite awful, and then nobody else is stepping up, right? And so, okay, specific to this game, game seven, this is why, this type of scenario is why I always feel it's vital for an NBA contender to have a wild card motherfucker on your team. You get down 20, 30 points in the first half, I need someone who's going to punch Luka in the face. I need someone who's going to tackle something, like get us, wake us the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? It can be versions of that. It doesn't have to be like this brutal tactics like we already saw. Like you don't want to injure somebody, right? But there is definitely a time and a place for a Ron Artest elbow to the jaw. Okay. And throughout that first half, Luka definitely needed, I mean, if I was on the Phoenix Suns, I would tell coach, put me in. I will elbow him in the face.
That's what Bismack is there for.
That's what somebody's got to be willing. Torrey Craig, Jay Crowder, whoever it is, you got to wake yourselves up. And it just felt like they were destined to sleep through this game.
Yeah. You know, really quick with Jay Crowder, like after game six, they're interviewing him and they're like, well, what are you going to do tomorrow? And he's like, pamper myself, get my nails done. Why don't you go fucking watch some tape, dog? Why don't you watch some tape? Cause your back is against the wall in game seven. You got to go home. Do you think Luka went to go get his nails done? Think Spencer Dinwiddie went to go get his nails done? Maxie, like, come on, man. And you're talking about somebody punching Luka in the face. How about it be you, Devin Booker, who's the one talking all that shit? And how about this too, Drew? And you know I love this, but because I am on you know, Paul George defense team, the same energy needs to go on Devin Booker. Somebody needs to make a meme of playoff D, okay? Because that's what you are. You're non-existent. And I'm sure Devin Booker's a great guy. Maybe the Kardashian curse is a real thing. If anything, that, I mean, maybe that's, it's definitely possible. But it should be Devin Booker. It should be Chris Paul are the guys that are supposed to be stepping up and be that guy. And it's pretty sad when JaVale McGee is the hardest playing player on the court for your basketball team. And that's the one thing I noticed. He didn't take plays off. Guy was doing everything he possibly could do. And to the Chris Paul legacy stuff, you don't think, I mean, I was tagged 100 times yesterday. Choke Paul. Point fraud clips. What's happening to your point fraud? And you know what? There's a lot of validity to that. I get it. But we also have to understand that Phoenix wasn't shit without Chris Paul. They wouldn't be in this position without Chris Paul. For all the Clipper fans that were, you know, tagging me and talking all this shit about Doc Rivers and about Choke Paul and Chris Paul, we wouldn't be in the position we are today without Chris Paul. And same thing goes to you, to the Phoenix Suns fans. Like you're not sniffing the conference finals, the playoffs. You couldn't get to the playoffs with just Devin Booker, barely, right? So, yes, this does affect the legacy. I want to give you a stat really quick. CP playoff stats, winning percentage, right? He's played 142 playoff games, okay? 50% winning percentage in 142 playoff games. Closeout games, he's been in 25. He's won 44% of those. Elimination games, he's had 15 games, 20% of those. Mm. And game sevens, he's had 8, 37.5% of those. Mm. So, you know, without that guy, you're not getting into that situation. So I don't understand all the hate towards Chris Paul, especially with Clipper fans. Do you?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think the thing that always happens with point guards like Chris Paul, but very specifically with Chris, is that he is so good that it's very easy for all of us to look at him and go, he's the best player on whatever team he's on. But it shouldn't be the case, because his best attribute is setting up the rest of his team, right? So to me, I think the blame falls more on Devin Booker than it does Chris Paul from an offensive standpoint. What I mean, Chris Paul's level of effort and I just intensity, lack of both of those things, there is no defense of that, right? So I'm not going to sit here and say that he doesn't, you know, have to hold any of this blame. He certainly does. But I think a lot of people that love Chris Paul love him for a very specific reason, because we like when point guards play the game like that. And you don't see that very often. I mean, it's fewer and fewer now. We actually, over the years, have discussed, like, who the fuck is left after Chris Paul when he finally hangs it up, who's going to be the point guard that plays this way. And I think we're going to be left kind of, you know, with our hands in our pockets, because I don't know who's coming up the Chris Paul point guard alley. But I understand the people that do think, the people that don't like Chris Paul are the ones that think we're all saying he's as good as Kobe, or he's as good as, you know, whatever player in Allen Iverson, like whatever player that they have in their head that they're going, no, Chris Paul is not this guy. They're different. It's a different metric. To me, the Devin Booker is the one that has to be matching Luka a little bit. If there is a superstar, quote unquote, superstar on the team, from a scoring perspective and just simply from an age perspective, it has to be Devin Booker. He has to be the one to go to, which is why he garnished, you know, in some cases, first or second all-team NBA voting, and in some cases, MVP votes. I mean, I think the kid finished fourth or fifth in MVP voting, Booker did. And so I think together, both of them clearly sucked a bunch of whatever you want to call it, but they definitely did. And the blame is deserving from everyone. Everyone on that team deserves a little piece of this. But of course, Monty Williams, Chris Paul, Devin Booker have to be in the front of the line. They have to be.
So you've been pro Devin Booker for a long time.
I have.
You mentioned earlier in the show that you don't know what to think about him now. So you know, does this stain what you think about Devin Booker? Because again, I'm bringing up Paul George because they had beef and didn't show up in one playoff series. It was bad in the bubble, mental health. He got a lot of shit for it. Should Devin Booker get a lot of shit for this?
Yeah, I think it's fair. But you know me though. I'm not one who just like spews shit out of my mouth. I don't attack these players because who knows what's happening, right? You know, maybe sometime down the road, we'll find out that he was playing through his hamstring. Like the hamstring was really fucked up the whole time, had to take medicine or shots or whatever to get on the court. Maybe that'll come out. Maybe it won't. Maybe we'll find out that he's had some personal shit going on. You know, maybe the Kardashian curse is real. It's hard for any of us to understand how a team that has been going so, and players that have been going so smoothly along this road for 2 years, like roughly 2 years, can abruptly stop like that. And we're always going to go like try and find the answer why. I think sometimes shit just happens, bro. And that's how I feel about the Paul George thing. And that's how that's kind of how I've discussed it when we brought it up, even in the bubble. It's just like shit happens, man. We know Paul George doesn't shoot the ball off the side of the backboard that frequently. We know Devin Booker doesn't have, you know, 2 for 14 games very free. Like, it just sometimes, man, you just don't have it, or it just doesn't work out. And I'm okay with leaving it there. I think that's where some people push because they want an answer. They need an answer. But if life has taught me anything, Clips, it's that you don't get a lot of answers to shit that you don't understand. Sometimes you get the answers. A lot of times you're just like, well, I guess that fucking happened. And I feel like that's what's going on here.
Yeah. Or, you know, or Luka's just that good, man. I mean, look what we're seeing. This the numbers this guy's putting up, it's MJ shit. It's playoff MJ shit. And the way he's doing it, the strength he has in the paint, the step back, where it's like I watch him do, it's like Steph status right now. It's like, damn, every shot that he puts up, you're like, oh, that's most likely going in, right? Maybe Luka is that guy now. And I think we're in year four, man. And this guy's taking his team where they haven't been in a while, less better players, right? If you're looking at these guys, they have a bunch of, I mean, look at Miami, look at who we have in the finals right now, right? We got the Warriors and we have Mavs, right? And we got a G League guy in Jordan Poole who's becoming, you know, turning into a stud. Miami Heat have like 8 undrafted players on their team, right? You're looking at Kleba, who, you know, nobody wanted. I think he was drafted by the Celtics. Nobody wanted him. Dinwiddie, nobody could play with him in Washington, right? We got Reggie Bullock, who's been passed around a while. Here's a question for you. How the hell does Reggie Bullock shoot with that thing flying in his in the front of his face and then it flopping on his neck? How do you see it? I said to myself last night, I'm like, it feels like, to me, it would be like wearing a baseball cap while I'm playing basketball. How do you do that?
You remember Alfred Payton, the guy who was on the Suns? Yes. He fully had a hat hair. He had hair hat. I don't know whatever version you call it. He had a brim. He had a brim to his hair. And I swear to God, Clips, I have a feeling that he almost didn't make an NBA roster. I feel like an ultimatum was given to Payton going, you need to cut that shit off your face. How can you see the rim when you're going to the hoop?
Yeah, there's something living in your hair, bro.
He's like, Coach, I don't really go to the rim to score. You know, that's Alfred Payton's MO. Either way, I agree. And I know that was a little tangent there, but yes, Bullock's hair is crazy. It's crazy. I don't understand. I would love to see what it looks like when it's not, you know, in like a bird kind of peacock.
It's
bird
so weird up here. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And the other thing we got to bring up really quick before we move on is like Jalen Brunson had a tough first two games, right? And he really stepped it up. Really stepped it up the last three. It's like, look, Luka's going to set the table for you. You guys just got to eat, right? If they're hitting three-pointers, I think they can beat a lot of people. If they're going to be jacking threes like they have in this series and knocking them down at a decent clip at 40%, at 38%, like they might have some problems with the Warriors. And we've seen it just during these playoffs, like the Warriors are – they're. I mean, it was so good to see Klay when Klay have go off that night. It was also really good to see them lose by 50. It was shocking to me, right? Like how can a jawless Grizzlies team knock them up by 50? It was just crazy. Anyways, moving forward to the next series, it's going to be
I got one thing before we move on. I think Luka would have done this, taking his team further, is what I mean. Get out of the first round if it wasn't for your Clippers. He's that good. And unfortunately, the Clippers were like the perfect antidote to the Luka, the sickness of Luka. Like he would have done this, I think, truthfully, to the majority of Western Conference teams last year and the year before. But he has to run into the Clippers, who have just, you know, a litany of 6'8" guys and a defensive identity that just befuddled him. And so again, I want to say that too, because, you know, a lot of people are surprised that he is this good and he's able to get, like, how can he do it this year versus previous years? I think it's matchup based, bro. Like, mm-hmm. You know, he can handle Utah. Yeah. Fucking no problem. Phoenix, not that big of a deal. They only got one guy, Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder. Really? I mean, two guys. And then Torrey Craig, I guess, for, you know, a couple minutes.
He actually had good minutes, though. I like Torrey Craig's minutes.
So did I. I thought he did great. It's just to me, I think it highlights like how perfect the Clippers were to go, like, for the Clippers, how perfect it was for them to match up against Luka. And even in those series clips, we know it. Like, he was outrageous. It was a 40.
I think he was 39 a game. A game.
So, you know. It was only a matter of time, and I feel like, you know, he will be on the verge again. Like every year now, it seems like he's favorite for MVP at the beginning of the year. Feels like a favorite. All we have to do is track his offseason eating, and then we'll know whether or not he'll be MVP. But neither here nor there. Phenomenal job from Luka. And guess who's going to have their hands full in the next series? And I don't know. They don't have – the Warriors don't have Clipper depth when it comes to 6'8" guys and defensive abilities. They got Klay, they got Draymond.
Yeah, but Klay's a step slow right now. And then Draymond.
Iggy's still in a suit.
Iggy ain't playing. And you
he's
think,
still in a suit. So he's not coming out there.
And you think Luka's scared of Iggy?
Why would he be scared of Iggy?
Look, you're right with the Clippers being built for the playoffs. A healthy Clipper team is just built for the playoffs. If we could just stay freaking healthy. But this isn't a Clipper podcast today. Like defensive matchups, who's going to guard Luka? Is it going to be Draymond? Like if it's going to be Draymond, it's foul trouble. You're out of the game quick. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be real quick for Draymond. Or Luka's going to get his nose broke at some point. You know, who's the guy that will break
Clay. I think it's Clay.
But you think Clay's got that? Got
well, that's the beauty of it. Right, Clay doesn't have to worry about how fast or slow Luka. Like he can stay with Luka. Mm-hmm. You know, he can just stay there, and he doesn't jump very high. It's not. This is almost like potentially the best matchup for Clay. He doesn't have to run chase anybody around screens. Luka's just gonna have the ball. He's gonna bring it up, and he's gonna stare at you. And yes, you'll have to. They do all their pick and roll shit, so mm-hmm. they'll have to figure out those rotations for sure. Because Luka will shed Clay on a pick and roll, and then they'll find Poole or they'll find Steph. My guess is they're gonna hunt for Steph. So I do think there's a scenario here where Steve Kerr has to go zone and throw some zone looks and throw some box and one shit, and we're gonna get real creative for the Warriors defensively, because Luka will just find what it is. He'll find whatever it is. Where's Steph? Where's Jordan Poole? If those guys are on the bench, give me whoever the weakest fucking defender is, and I'll like come set a screen, and then we're just going to do this. So they're just going to have to figure that out. And one thing that hasn't happened enough and potentially like definitely not in this Phoenix Suns series is the trap mentality. Like if you can get Luka dribbling to his right, trapping him dribbling to his right, because when he dribbles left, he loves to pull. So it's too easy for him to get out of the way, and then he can obviously fire the ball over the top for a nice pass. But if you can trap him when he's going right, I think you can throw off a little bit of what's happening. And then you just have to recover well, and you have to hope that Kleba doesn't hit the three or Bertans. You know, who know? Watch out now. Bertans, head full of steam now. You never know. You never know what's going to happen with the Latvian laser. So, you know, I think to me I'm most intrigued by how the Warriors will handle Luka, and then how the Mavericks are going to try to handle this juggernaut of a Warriors motion offense. I'm so excited to watch that unfold, even though I feel robbed of the better series between the Warriors and the Suns. I mean, I was very much looking forward to that.
We say that now, but as you know, after watching this past series, I want to see more Luka. I just want to see more Luka. I want more of that guy. And I want to see him go against the former champs, man. And if Dallas can, I mean, man, look, they were attacking every rebound defensively. They were in sync. And if they can just keep that same energy, I think it's going to be interesting, man. If I'm a betting man, I think the Warrior, I would take the Warriors, but I'm rooting for the Mavs right now. And now on the other end, I was rooting for, I love Giannis. I wanted Giannis to pull out this series. And, you know, it's wild because, you know, how we always talk about the importance of regular season and regular season games. And like, it was the final game of the regular season and Coach Bud sits Middleton and sits Giannis, but then Boston plays through and ends up getting that home court advantage. Now, would that mean game seven in Milwaukee, would it change the outcome? I don't know, but it sure helps playing a game seven at home. And the same way we're talking about Luka right now, because we've watched his whole 4-year career, we've watched Jason Tatum, right? We've seen him have his troubles in the playoffs, in big moments at times. And then we've just seen, I mean, that game six was unbelievable what he did and how he's turned into this facilitator of the offense, making the right passes. I mean, if there was a bet before the game that like, yo, Grant Williams is going to shoot 18 threes and hit seven of them. Could you even imagine if there was even a bet like that? But like, look, he's finding the open guys. He's hitting the big shots when they need it. The other players on the teams like Grant Williams, like Pritchard, who finally had a really good game. Derek White had really good minutes. They're very deserving to be in the place that they're at right now. And I watched an interview with Tatum. I think it was with JJ, and he was just saying how much smarter he's getting on the basketball floor with making the right decision. And that comes from watching and talking to the OGs in the game and kind of trying to learn the game better. Giannis, I mean, without Middleton, it's a tough series for Giannis, and they weren't hitting anything. I mean, great. They got nothing from Grayson Allen. They got nothing from Pat Connaughton, who actually had a really good series for them. Lopez, who, you know, could have eaten in the paint, decided to just shoot threes the whole time. And then you got Giannis. There was a panic mode there for a minute where he was just forcing up a lot of bad, ill-advised shots. Drew was trying his best, but the better team won, man. That's just what it is. And again, like, this is, we've said it on the last show. If you would have said in December that the Boston Celtics will be in the Eastern Conference Finals, nobody would believe you. And another team that's extremely well coached, everybody that's bought into this system, right? And another team where it's not a big three, man. It's not these superstars that are the ones deciding the games. It's like Shaq says, it's the others. We've been saying this for a while now. It's the other guys, man. If you can get something from Grant Williams and you can get something from Pritchard and Derek White, and obviously you want something from Jaylen Brown. I don't know, man. It's just these guys need to be talked more about. Do I think Grant Williams is going to have another 7 3-pointer game? I don't, but I think his confidence is super sky high right now. And the fact that the Bucks just let him shoot, like after he hit his first three, they weren't even defending the three. So I don't know. I was a little frustrated with that, but I think the better team won. And I think that just goes to show you how hard it is to run it back and win another chip, man.
This is going to be the Bucks fans' version of something the Lakers fans and the Clippers fans have done over the last two seasons. If we were only healthy, if we only had Chris Middleton, all of this wouldn't be the case. We would be moving on to the next round, blah, blah, blah. It happens to all of us, you know, and you know, when your team wins a championship, that means typically you were lucky and you didn't have one of your best players go down with some sort of catastrophic injury that would stop. I mean, think about what happened last year. I keep going back to the fact that Giannis like dislocated his left leg from his body and then was back playing. It felt like 30 minutes later he was back. And like, so, you know, that's how quick it could have, that whole thing could have evaporated for the Bucks last year, right? Just the roll of the fucking dice, man. I mean, this is the Grant Williams aspect of this is so awesome. I love this guy. How can you not root for Grant Williams? Just a hard ass worker, giving his body up. It seems like he's doing it with a smile on his face. Like, you know, he's getting dirty and banged up, like, you know, elbows all day long. Just, it felt like Giannis is made out of elbows. I bet them. It must feel like everywhere you touch is just like, that's another elbow to my face, to my chest. But bigger than that, this series was the best series of the playoffs. I don't even think it's close. I thought the Boston Celtics Nets series was going to be more along the lines of what we had in
this. We had high hopes for that one, Drew.
We did. It was still entertaining, but it was just a few games shy of seven.
Totally downhill after game one.
Yeah. more than the excuses or more than anything else on the Bucks side, you got to tip the cap to the Boston Celtics. This is a team that trusts one another. And that extends to however many guys Ime Udoka lets touch the floor. If it's eight, that means all eight of these guys are trusted. And I don't really see, you know, Derek White has been shooting terribly. Mm-hmm. And guess who's still making the extra pass to Derek White? Everybody on the floor. Tatum, Brown, Horford, everyone is still, if he's open, they're throwing him the ball because that's trust. And then on the defensive end, that's all you can say. It has to be trust. It has to be commitment in order for them to put on a show like they did against Giannis and this paint-dominant Milwaukee Bucks team. Now, moving forward, the Grant Williams piece is even more important because Miami is small. And guess who can be in there? Guarding Bam Adebayo if you want. Put him on Jimmy if Jimmy's hot. You want to slow him down, lean on him a little bit, put a muscular guy on him, put Grant Williams out there, you know, slow him down. They can go small if they make it past the Heat and they go against the Warriors. Grant Williams, huge. It would be huge against the Warriors and the Mavs, too, because the Mavs don't really have a center either. So, anyway, moving forward, that level of performance and that level of confidence in a guy like Grant Williams to just let him shoot, like, find him, let him jack it. I don't care if he takes 18 threes because he's going to hit a couple.
I don't know about 18. I think you should keep it to like 7.
Well, let's be real. Okay. He wouldn't have taken the last 5 in that second half if they aren't up by 20, whatever, 30 points. You know, it got pretty out of hand there in the second half. And he was having a hell of a night. So go ahead and let it fly, baby. Like, let's see, you know, Horford set his career high in this series. Let's see if Grant Williams can. And lo and behold, he did. And he was definitely, a key component throughout this series as the reason why the Celtics are going to, you know, walk into this next round with no home court advantage. But the point you brought up was very interesting. The Celtics, again, trust, confidence in themselves, said, fuck it, we'll take on the Nets. We don't care. Let's do it. We're not backing away. And that, I mean, that for as a fan of teams, that's what you want your team to go into with, like into the postseason with. You don't want them to going, ooh, I don't know. You know, oh, Kevin Durant.
You know, analytics says we don't match up well against these guys.
Maybe we'll stay away from that one. Maybe we'll lose. No, fuck that. You want your team to go against the best and give it their all. And if they win, great. And if they don't, okay, at least they gave it their all. That's what all of us want as fans. And if you're a Boston Celtics fan, you must be over the moon. Because just as you said, in December, in November, zero Boston Celtics fans were thinking that this would be the team that we're looking at now moving into these Eastern Conference Finals. To me, the favorites. They are the favorites. Even though Miami will have home court advantage, the Boston Celtics they have to be the favorite. Maybe not for game one. Maybe they won't be the favorite for game one in Miami. But they are my favorites to make it to the finals, just as the Warriors are my favorites to make it to the finals in the West. And I am very excited for this series. I think this series could get the only thing that I'm nervous about for the Celtics is how banged up they are. I mean, they had a relatively easy time against the Nets, but that's a very physical series against the Bucks. And so if they can, seems like they got through that series unscathed, right? I mean, Marcus Smart is just, he looks like he's just, something's wrong on every part of his limbs.
So does Grant. Grant's got a bloody nose,
so
got cuts.
Horford. I mean, like, right. Everyone was banged up. So, and Miami is not going to make it an easy ride for them also. So there, it'll be physical again. I'm just hoping, you know, just like we do every year, I'm hoping this series isn't because Jaylen Brown, you know, gets injured or Marcus Smart is out for the series or whatever it is. I hope it's decided by the play on the court and not injuries.
Yeah, I agree. Really quick though, like I'm, you know, we talk shit about Phoenix and how bad they were. We talk shit about Philadelphia because they gave out no effort. Like I have nothing but respect for Milwaukee, and Milwaukee fans should not be like pissed off or down at all, or make, of course there will always be the excuse, like you said, we didn't have Middleton, but they fought, man. They brought it every single night. Giannis, I mean, Giannis is Giannis. He busted his ass that whole series. The other guys stepped up until that last final game, and they just got outplayed, you know?
And I think going back to the Mavericks point that I was making about Luka, like Luka had to unfortunately go against the Clippers 2 years in a row. Sometimes it's as simple as matchups, right? Because I think if it just so happens that the Bucks end up having to play the Heat instead of the Celtics, I think the Bucks probably win that series, you know? But the Celtics end up with Al Horford and mini Al Horford and Grant Williams, who are just like, fuck, we don't care.
Right.
We don't care. I don't care if I get 10 points, if I get 20 points, if I get 0 points. My goal is to make it as hard on you to get this ball in the basket. And not too many teams have that in their arsenal. So I think you're right. The Bucks can still feel pretty proud of what they did. And even though they fell short, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, they played hard, even though they lost that game pretty substantially.
Yeah. Also, like it was like Giannis had a bad game with 20, 25 and 20.
Yeah. Right? He almost had a triple double in the first quarter.
Right. And also can there be a summit this summer with just NBA officials and figure out how to referee him?
Man.
Figure out how to referee this guy.
Because that was bad. It was David Finch or something like that. Fincher. That guy was calling offensive fouls every 30 seconds.
I didn't understand.
Jesus,
and then
man.
Somebody, and then he'll mow over somebody. Smart will end up in the third row. They're like, let it go.
It's clean.
It makes no sense. It's so, I know it's been said a million times, but it is so close to having to referee Shaq. It's ridiculous, man. And you shouldn't be penalized for being faster and stronger than everybody. You just shouldn't. And it just is what it is. I guess the game plan playing against Giannis, though, is try to get as many offensive fouls as quick as possible on him, which in today's NBA, it's very possible to do that.
Well, but the best way to defend Giannis is having all five of your guys locked the fuck in and having a defensive player as a guard, like having Marcus Smart be the defensive player of the year as a help defender who takes more charges than he turns the ball over, which is both are kind of a lot. So like, again, it's the perfect storm. That's why I think that's the thing I keep going back to. And that's why I brought up the Clipper thing against Luka, because that's the perfect storm. Sometimes, you know, as good as you can be as an individual player, whether that's Shaq against Detroit, in the Detroit Pistons series, or, you know, we can go down the list.
That was a bad matchup for the Lakers. That was
Michael Jordan against Detroit struggle. I mean, you know, there's always these hurdles, right? And so Luka, you know, has to take a couple lumps against the Clippers, gets through, and now he's in the Western Conference Finals. You know, Giannis has had his versions of that too, but in this one, you know, fell back because they were just he couldn't get it done. This team was too good.
Can we talk about Philly really quick?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Miami beats Philly. Jimmy makes his comments, which are just money. Tobias Harris over me. I love that so much. Embiid's pissed off afterwards, throwing kind of like the James Harden shade, which
he did it. He did it really well, though.
He's very good at it.
He didn't do the Ben Simmons. It wasn't as bad as the Ben Simmons throw under the bus.
100%.
This one was way softer.
Oh, I thought the post game, everything was better than the freaking game, because the game was horrific. But everything that happened afterwards, I swore to God I wouldn't talk about Ben Simmons for 6 months until we started next season. But
the guy keeps posting selfies.
That's the selfie with Jimmy Butler in the background and him smiling is just such a troll. And it makes me hate this guy even more. And why do you look so happy, Ben? Why do you look so happy? How's the back, Ben?
That's the first thing, dude. The picture that he posted, the selfie that he posted in the back of the car after he got done with his surgery, is the happiest I've seen him. And I was like, dude, are you happy because you know you have an excuse not to play basketball again for another 9 months? Is that why you're so happy right now? Because that's not fucking cool. And if that's the case, please donate your money to some people that need it, because you don't deserve it.
Yeah, I mean, talk to Bismack.
You're going to win this arbitration bullshit. And you're going to get some of that money back, is my guess. Donate that to people that actually like work for a living and try to do their job, because I can't handle that. Sorry.
No, I agree. And just so, you know, all encompassing with the Ben Simmons tweet during the game, with Embiid afterwards, I think the cool thing about Embiid is he really says how he feels. And I think he takes into consideration people's feelings too, but he answers the questions that the media asks him. Right. And I think he was definitely spot on with that. You know, people were expecting us to get this Houston Harden, and he's not. He's more of a facilitator now. Right. And it just didn't work. It's not working. It didn't work. And then you got Doc pissed off too. And he's had the best pressers lately. Like, he's so upset and so frustrated right now. But it seems like Morey is going to want Harden back, and he wants Doc back, and they're going to try to run this thing back again. But I don't know, man. I don't know if Harden's the guy. And we see people's true colors come out in the playoffs. And again, if we're going to talk about Devin Booker and about Chris Paul failing, and we're going to I'm done talking about PG because we didn't even make the freaking playoffs, but it is what it is. Then we have to talk about Harden. The effort, even from Embiid, was horrific in that game. And I can write it off Embiid for being hurt and having his face broken and whatever. But like, look, man, we talked about this on the show many times, legacy games. This is a legacy season that you need in order to continue being talked about as the upper echelon players in the NBA. He was a no-show, man. He didn't want the Rock at all. He wanted no parts of even participating in anything close to a win, right? And if this is the people that are getting $250 million bags, miss me with that shit. Miss me with all of that. And He's at this stage in his career. He was very good and he still is good. And if you want a James Harden facilitator player on your team that can potentially get you 9 assists and 17 points, which is good. It's a good output from a player, but I can get that elsewhere for way cheaper. And I just don't know, Drew, what do you think? What do you think these guys should be doing moving forward? What do you think the next play is to utilize this generational talent in Joel Embiid, this creature that we have? Isn't it wild that, like, there's no centers in the final, in the Eastern or Western Conference Finals right now? It's all small ball, right? Is there one legit center besides Time Lord and he's not even playing?
Yeah. Like Bam, I guess Bam
is Bam a center?
No, see, that's the thing. I mean, he plays center,
right?
But yeah, I think it technically he would be the only one that I think I would be okay with identifying as a center. But yeah, it is crazy. I mean, but it's also not crazy because the Warriors are still there and they've been the ones that set this whole trend. Whatever, it feels like 10 years ago now, but it's not. Shit, dude, it's almost 10 years ago now, though. You know, so I think Doc Rivers and James Harden have to be the happiest two people witnessing those game sevens, and especially the collapse of the Phoenix Suns, because takes a little bit of that heat, takes a little bit of that attention off of the old Sixers problem yet again. God damn, they must have been just like, you know, who knows if Doc or Harden even cared enough about anything to watch that game, but maybe they're falling on their phone. They're like, fuck, this is awesome. I don't know. I'm not going to have to field any questions today, because all those questions are going to be directed towards the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, Doc sending Monty text messages. How's it feel, buddy? How's it feel, bud? Sucks, doesn't it?
No, I'm here for you. I'm here for you if you need help, because I might need to be an assistant coach on your team next year. No, the James Harden thing it's tough for me and for most to swallow, because it happens so fast, right? Like, we're just so used to some more gradual decline
right,
in athleticism. It's just the truth. I mean, especially with technology, and you got fucking Tom Brady still playing football. Mm-hmm. So like, all of us are still living within that reality. It's like, how is Tom Brady 47, however the old he is now, 45, and he's still, you know, playing NFL football, and yet James Harden, who's my age clips, he's 32, he can barely dunk anymore. And it's like, and yes, this guy was one of the most explosive things. So that's a whole nother conversation. And I really just feel bad, like, dinging Harden for that, because to me, it seems like there's not much he can do about it. Now, there's a big but involved in that, outside of Harden's butt, is maybe he can work hard in the offseason to get some of this back and, like, really, you know, decide that this isn't going to be how he wants to play the remaining days that he has left in the NBA. Does he want a $250 million contract? Of course he does. But does he think he'll actually get it if he can't show at least a little bit more than he did this year for that Sixers team and for the Nets team? So I feel bad criticizing him if it really is the best he can do. And so I think I'll hold off on that criticism until he shows up next year and looks the same. Then I'll feel more comfortable criticizing him, because he will have had the time to go get the medical procedures done, to go get, you know, a second and third opinion, to go work with a nutritionist, to go work with a trainer. But if I see you out with rappers in Paris, or, you know, down eating some good stuff at with the lemon pepper Lou wings down in Atlanta,
Magic City, yo.
Then that's a whole nother story, and then you deserve a lot of that criticism, in my opinion. But I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt.
You don't think he deserves any criticism after the year that he just through?
I'm simply talking about his explosiveness as an athlete. That's what I'm talking about. Now, that being said, the second half that he had against the Heat is completely indefensible. I don't care how good or how bad you are, athletically speaking, like where you are in that, on that spectrum of your own athleticism and your health. Only shooting the ball 2 times, bro, and you know Embiid is hurt. You know Embiid is playing hurt, man. He's got that Zorro mask on, but anytime someone sneezes around it, he's on the floor. because of how much pain he's in. So, I mean, to me, if you're James Harden, play hard enough to where you might get injured. Like, if you're so worried about getting injured, or, oh, I don't have the explosiveness, or, you know, things are a little tight, get injured. That's what we, I mean, you know, play until you literally can't. Play harder than you possibly could have imagined playing before. And none of that. There was no urgency. I mean, he shot the ball twice in the second half. Well, he had 2 points or 0 points? It's some outrageous performance. So
I think that warrants criticism, though, Drew. And I'm perfect.
That's what I'm saying. That, to me, is worth criticizing. Not his steep decline athletically, because there may be very little to nothing he could do about that. But there is something you can do on the court. And that's be a better basketball player and be more assertive.
Yeah, I totally agree. But also, like, if he's not doing what's needed to be done to win a basketball game, then bench his ass. Give me freaking Shake Milton, who's going to whatever. He's at least going to come out and play. Give me somebody that wants to come out here and play and want the ball and take more than two shots. Right. We saw what happened to Allen Iverson, right? Athletically, if you want to, yeah. We saw what happened with Vince Carter, right? Vince Carter turned it into a 20-year career being a 3-point shooter, right?
And coming off the bench.
And coming off the bench.
Yeah. Being comfortable coming off the bench.
Right. Allen Iverson was never comfortable coming off the bench. Him and Russell Westbrook are the same way with this. They never could get it through their heads that maybe we're not the same players anymore and we will be more valuable coming off the bench. Like Carmelo Anthony has turned his career around and turned into a damn good bench player, right? It's cool. I'm not the 40-point Melo anymore, but I still want to play basketball. I would have rather had Melo starting in Philly than what I saw in James Harden. That's all I'm saying. Give me the guy that wants to be out there. And again, if it was James Harden and if he went 4 for 27, I'd be better with that than the taking of two shots.
Yes.
That's the shit that pisses me off. And then
totally agree.
And then to be like, yeah, of course I'm going to opt into my contract. Yeah, of course he is for 250. You can't pay him $250 million,
no,
bro.
No.
Your liability. As talented as Kyrie is, you can't pay him $250 million. There's a liability. As if we think Ben Simmons could be any version of the Ben Simmons. Oh, fuck, I don't even know what version that is. It's been so long, and I don't even know if Ben Simmons is talented anymore or even gives a shit about playing basketball. But you can't pay him that money. The money should go to players like Grant Williams and to the Klebers and to the guy, Marcus Smart. Pay the man, right?
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying about not criticizing players with issues that might be out of their control, which could be an injury. He hasn't been the same since the hamstring, right?
Yeah.
We know this. And a lot of players, they're not the same after that. But I think that performance warrants at least us to bring it up. I mean, it was atrocious. It was, if I wanted Philly fans to chime in, we don't have many, right? But I know that they're not happy about that.
Well, I think, again, I'm not trying to defend James Harden's performance. I think the way that I described him was more about like me coming to grips with the reality of what James Harden is now. And I think that's been a relatively common topic of conversation when discussing him and the 76ers. And I think the reason I can't be critical of that is because, I mean, shit, dude, I can't dunk a basketball anymore, right? When I was 25, throw me a lob, dude. I'll slam that shit any way you want. But I'm 32 now, and I can't do that. So I can understand, even though, you know, all of us know James Harden should still very much be on a higher athletic scale than I am holding myself accountable for. The performance that we're talking about, it's a similar thing. Like the Chris Paul, the Devin Bookers, you know, these people that unfortunately in these games – did not show up. And James Harden has to be mentioned. Absolutely has to be mentioned because his team really needed him to step up and deliver. He absolutely didn't. And it felt worse than that because it felt like he didn't try.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the part that I think everyone's witnessed and has a major problem with.
I didn't need to see James Harden drop 40. It would have been great for Philly. If he gave 23 points and 9 rebounds and 7 assists, perfectly fine, and Philly fans would have probably been fine with that.
Right.
It's the fact that he knows his legacy and his playoff run. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. There might not be a worse-er player in the playoffs that doesn't show up. And I guess maybe it's not Chris Paul. Chris Paul just loses games. I mean, he choked on this one. I think all the Chris Paul
and they were together.
They were together.
They had a chance to beat the Warriors, and so that was a recipe for disaster. I think so. Maybe something that will resonate with the listeners is it doesn't matter whether or not James Harden had 9 points, 23 points, 39 points, or how many shots he took. If it's not very difficult for a seasoned basketball fan to tell if you're trying hard. Mm-hmm. And when you're a fan of any team and you're witnessing one of your best players not try or seems like he doesn't care that your season is about to be over, this is when the vitriol starts to come out. And I've been on many a times very upset with Lakers players for things like that. And
LeBron specifically.
But part of the reason why Kobe is so revered by us as Laker fans is because there was no giving up. Okay. And we didn't win every championship every year. We know that. We won a few and Kobe was a major part of them. But even in losing efforts, it felt like he wasn't going to let Phil Jackson bench him. Right. So if I'm Booker, if I'm CP, if I'm Harden, and Doc or Monty Williams is telling me I have to sit down because we're down by 30, I'm saying, fuck that. I'm not going to sit down. I'm either going to foul out of this game or I'm going to get ejected or I'm going to go down with the goddamn ship. And not enough guys are willing to put their neck on the line. And that's something that is few and far between. And that, to me, speaks more loudly to Mamba mentality than some of these cats out here that are saying Mamba when they're shooting a step back three and it goes in. Right? It's not about that. It's about diving on the fucking floor, even though you might be down by 12 in the middle of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Why do Philly fans love Allen Iverson like he's a god? Because he was that guy. Gave it every single night. Never took a night off. You know? AI never won a chip, but he sure tried every single night, dog. Every single night. But
yeah, he didn't. He wasn't a fan of practice. We know that.
Some people don't need practice, Drew.
When it came to the games.
We're talking about the game, Drew. He was always locked in. All right. So what's your take then? If we got Celtics, Miami in this next round.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going team Celtics. I really want to see them do well. I love what I'm seeing with Jason Tatum. Again, as a basketball fan, and everybody that's listening to the show, obviously is a basketball fan. It's awesome to see players like just bloom in front of your eyes, man. It really is. Like up until that game six for Tatum, like his best moment was dunking on LeBron. Like that was like your like really best moment in basketball was catching LeBron on a body. And now we're seeing this guy take over games in playoffs and watching Luka turn into the player that we know we knew it was coming, but it's come sooner than we thought, right? Or not, maybe not sooner. Maybe this is where Luka should be. But like watching these guys, and even watching Jimmy Butler, who's like doesn't get talked about enough because his game isn't sexy. There's really nothing sexy about Jimmy Butler's game at all. But there's another guy that you chose Tobias Harris over me. He's gonna come he's gonna be prepared. He's going to play his ass off. He's gonna play through injury. Right. And he's a really great leader of that team. And he's probably one of the funniest dudes. Talk about post-game pressers and social media. That guy is great.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a really good battle. I think Boston's got it, though, man. They're on if anybody has momentum, it's them right now. And again, we're going to bring up the word confidence. I think Jason Tatum has the supreme confidence right now, not only in himself, but everybody, like you said, everybody else on the court with him. And it's amazing what happens when you learn how to pass the basketball. Marcus Smart, like you're saying, making those extra passes. And, you know, even dude, I know you saw the Pritchard like step back, Harden step back, wet mm-hmm. three. Oh, yeah. And then looks at the bench and says, this is what I do. Like, OK, that's a little extra Peyton. But it's nice to see that confidence, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been tough this postseason because I do like this Boston Celtics team. But that's just like not allowed in my brain. I can't get past that. It's still the fucking green and white of the Celtics. And I can't, you know, I was, yeah. So I am drawn to the Celtics team. If I remove my fandom, I found myself rooting for the Celtics over the Bucks. I can't explain it, but I did. And I think, unfortunately, as much as I'd like to be rooting for the Heat, I will probably be pulling for the Celtics in this series. And there's something about just the atmosphere, the team, the way that they play. I'm drawn to that. And I think that again, it's irrespective of what the front of the jersey says. It happens to say Celtics and it happens to be green. So fuck, I guess I'm rooting for the Celtics for the first time in my life.
Blasphemous. You know, what's funny is after the ABC games here in SoCal, they go to, there's a show with Rob Fugasaki, who's the sports guy on ABC. And he does a show with Norm Nixon and Michael Cooper. It's a terrible show. Absolutely terrible. Like,
oh yeah.
I can't believe they have these two guys on there, but
it's been going on for 25 years
forever, dude. Yeah. And I just don't understand. It's so bad. But Michael Cooper can't even say the word, still can't say the word Celtics.
No.
Right. He hates it. There is a deep inserted hatred from Laker fans to Celtics fans. And I love it. I do love that, but I get what you're saying, man. I get it's gotta be hard.
It's a tough spot for me, man, because they are fun. They're fun to watch. And I like the guys on their team, and it would be just so much better if this team, if all of these guys, if this was like Toronto, or even if it was Philly, like if it was just a different fucking team, I would be all in. But begrudgingly, I am rooting for them. I think something you brought up, though, the Tatum-Butler piece will be important. I do think they'll guard each other. I have to assume that Tatum is willing to take that on, and I know Jimmy wants that. Jimmy probably wants to guard Tatum, and I think that will be a lot of fun. I think Tatum has evolved into quite a stout defender in his own right. Like, he's still not amazing, but it is easy to forget that he's fucking 6'9", almost 6'10", and got those super long arms and can jump, you know, all that good stuff. So I'm excited to watch that matchup, and I hope we don't get any dicking around where they're trying to avoid each other and switching on to other guys. I would love to see a one-on-one matchup. We don't get a lot of those kind of superstar versus superstar matchups too often. They're always hidden.
You think Jimmy's a superstar?
It's sure. I mean, semantics. It is what it is. He's the best player on their team.
And definitely.
He scored 40 points at least a couple times in this postseason. So it's hard for me to say he's not, even though he's on the back end of his superstardom.
I know this is going to hurt our boy Jeff Crompton's feelings, but I just think it would be so awesome to have a Mavs-Celtics finals. It would be so freaking awesome to get Mavs-Celtics finals, man. That's what I want to see. That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah. Well, I know who you're pulling for. It sounds like you're pulling for the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're going to win it?
Yeah, I think they can win this. I think, again,
I think going so too. I think it comes down to Miami's offense is still troublesome for me, and they're going to be going up against the best defense in the NBA, which is the Boston Celtics. So I think that part should like suss itself out, but like it also will be based on how Boston shoots the ball, right? If they go into one of these other, like another slump where they're just like can't hit their threes, then of course Miami will have the door open. But Miami, in the back end, the last, you know, whatever, two or three games against the Sixers, started to find their shooting rhythm a little bit better, including Jimmy, including Strus and some of these other guys. But, you know, Miami's going to be tough. I think it will be another really tough battle for the Celtics, but I think they'll win. I honestly think they'll win in six at home in Boston.
Well, Lowry's out for game one. This is when you want Lowry to be on your squad. This is when you need a guy like that.
Yes.
I think if Max Strus
is smart.
Well, I think if Max Strus is your second best player or your second best shooter, I that's got to be tough. And he's been great. All these guys, undrafted dudes on this team, all of them have been really well. And again, as I've gotten older, I know it's not fun to do, but I love watching how coaches respond, right? I love seeing how they adjust. Adjustments are huge. And I think it's because of, you know, I was really interested in Ty Lue this year, mostly this year. I mean, there was some last year, but this year, just watching how they respond to offensive and defensive schemes and matchups and what's going to work better. This is why you coach, right?
Yep.
Watching that clip of Jason Kidd coaching his team on defense, literally coaching, telling them exactly what to do, right, is pretty awesome. And then hearing his speech afterwards was awesome too. I'm rooting for those guys. I think Lowry, they're going to need Lowry, Miami, if they want to win this series. But I still want Mavs, Boston in the finals. I think it'll be great. A Tatum Luka thing will be awesome.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. The Warriors are going to beat the Mavs. It's one of those things, man, where I just think it's one thing to go up against the Phoenix Suns team that just could not figure it out offensively, couldn't put the ball in the hoop.
Who's to say that the Warriors will?
The 68% that they shot from the field in game five. That's who's to say.
That's like, big.
The Suns will never, they'll never have a game where they shoot 68% from the field. They just won't. And because they don't have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole, like no other team will do that this year, period. I mean, and you know, and those percentages go back way, way deep, because guess who used to shoot the ball a lot better? Guys that were 7 feet tall before there was a 3-point line. The percentages went way up, you know, when you used to just throw it to Wilt and he would just kind of put That's the true. Ball, place it in the hoop. Pretty good percentages back then. The point is very simple. In the Mavericks and the Warriors series, I expect the Mavericks to take one or two, kind of like how I thought it was going to go against the Suns. But I expect them to take one or two, but I think the Warriors will emerge. They can score, right? And I just think even on weird shooting nights for Steph or Klay or Jordan, they have enough firepower within to kind of even like, it's very rare that all three of them are off. It's so rare. And that's the beauty of the team that they've formulated, that they've come up with in the Bay Area, is that they just have cover, right? So Klay can be off and Steph and Jordan can still drop 30 each, or Steph can be off and Klay goes for, you know, 37, right? Like they just have coverage. And I think the Dallas Mavericks will struggle to keep pace. Even though Luka could probably score, you know, 40 or 50 a game.
It's wishful thinking, Drew. That's what I want. I'm just telling you what I want. Do I think it's going to happen? I don't know. I'm rooting for the Mavs, dude. I got no skin in the game, rooting for the Mavs. Give me a final thought, Drew. You got anything for me?
I do. Yeah, and it's quick, but I mean, it's something that this weekend really solidified for me. And it's something that I think you even said not too long ago. But this weekend, man, these game sevens, we lose our champions, the Milwaukee Bucks. We lose our runner-up, the Phoenix Suns from last year. And it just shows you how hard it is to do anything like repeat or even make it to two finals in a row. Nevertheless, do a three-peat or do what the Warriors did, you know, go into four finals in a row. All this nonsense that we somehow get used to because we see it every so often. We don't praise it enough. But this Milwaukee Bucks team without Chris Middleton, okay, they go down. This Phoenix Suns team has a collapse of potentially the collapse of the decade. I don't know. We could argue that a couple different ways. But one of the worst collapses that we've had in professional sports.
It definitely trumps the Clippers collapse against Houston and Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, correct?
No, dude, that's 3-1, Doug.
Oh, come on, dude.
That's 3-1.
Come on.
That's 3-1. 3-1 God, always. 3-1 always. 3-1 always trumps that.
Damn it.
I think sometimes we take for granted the historical significance of these teams that are able to figure it out and not lose and win, you know, multiple championships or take multiple trips in a row to a finals. And, you know, really, this is weird, but it brings me to LeBron. Like, how can he possibly have gone to eight straight finals and nine out of 10? Yes. Like, how the fuck did that happen? And the Milwaukee Bucks and the Suns can't even get to the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. But it does, to me, put some historical context on things that we've taken for granted, like the teams that have done it, and like LeBron James, who just did it wherever the fuck he was with whomever he was with.
That's what's so amazing about him, Drew. That's why he has to be in your convo. LeBron haters, got again, numbers don't lie, man. That's why, like, if you don't have Tom Brady as the GOAT, I don't, like, right. Who else is your GOAT then, man?
Right.
Who, yeah. Like, there's nobody close, right? So it is what it is. And you're right, Drew. It's extremely difficult. Health plays a big part of that. But
and luck. And health luck. And luck. They're just two of the same thing.
100%. I actually have two, really. I'm going to make these quick. Okay. Number one, you know, I love Memphis, right? I love the city, lived there a long time. Got a lot of ties in Memphis. Love Memphis rap, hip hop. 3-6 Mafia is my favorite rap group of all time. I still bang the clap. Tila's my guy. I listen to everybody from Memphis and I love the whole energy and that whole team on Memphis. But, you know, the whoop that trick shit needs to stop. Like I can't stand, I get why they play that song.
It's a great song, great movie.
It's not, look, man, in today's cult, I love the song, love the movie. Awesome. It's based off of 3-6 Mafia, just to let you know. But whoop that trick, like in today's culture, I mean,
it doesn't work.
No, it means like, let's kick the shit out of this prostitute. That's what it means, right? Yeah. And now they're turning it in. It's true, Drew. Like, let's.
I know. Okay.
And now they're turning it into like, now you're calling the other team, you're dancing and calling the other team tricks and shit like that. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. There's plenty of really great songs that you can play.
2022. That one's tough.
It's not the homie. It is so politically incorrect.
Yeah.
that I don't know, dude. It's just my take on it. Nobody else has brought this up because I don't think people really like when you listen to old heads talking, like talking heads or people on podcasts, they don't get what that like the meaning behind it, right? And I don't know. I think it's really disrespectful. And even if you called me a trick to my face, I would be extremely disrespected. Okay. And the fact that you're dancing to whoop that trick and like, it's just crazy to me. I think it needs to stop.
I also think there's a lot of options. It's not like there's just one song that they could play from Memphis.
No.
That would, there's so many, 3-6 has so many.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many artists and different songs that you could very easily plug into that moment and everyone would still turn up. They'd still throw the towels.
Right.
They'd still do the dancing and all that shit. I totally, the whole time, dude, the whole playoffs, I'm like, they're really playing that. And the whole stadium is all right. Okay.
Moms are screaming. Yeah, moms are screaming. Whoop that trick while swinging towels in the air because they have no idea what they're talking about.
Oh my God. Hustle and Flow. What a great movie.
Great movie. But like it had to go through a couple levels of people, right? Hey, guess what? I got an idea. We should play this song every time we're winning a game.
Someone had to approve it.
And then some old white lady was like, yeah, I like it. That's got a really nice beat to it. Right. And it's like, come on, dude. Anyways, get rid of that really quick. I'm going to go back to Chris Paul. Patrick Beverley had an epic Patrick Beverley interview today on SportsCenter. He was on First Take.
I was wondering if you were going to bring this
up. Of course, I'm bringing this up because
I thought so.
It makes me love Patrick Beverley so much more. And also, he's so full of shit on a few things. He brought and put my boy Paul George on blast too, because he was very adamant about saying, dude, nobody's scared about Phoenix Suns. We wanted him. We wanted to play Phoenix. And he's like, I was talking to one of the guys last night. He's like, you know what? I'll tell you who it is. It was Paul George I was talking to last night. Nobody's scared of Phoenix, right? And I totally agree. I don't think the Clippers would be scared to play them. I don't think teams were petrified of them. It's obvious. Dallas was perfectly fine with playing them. The Pelicans looked fine playing against them as well. But Patrick goes from set to set, and he's just talking shit the whole time. He's looking at he said, Chris Paul, nobody's scared of Chris Paul. Can't guard anybody. He's like a cone out there, right? And I'm like, yo, first of all, don't put private conversations that you're having with your other teammates on blast on ESPN. You shouldn't be doing that, right? Talk amongst yourselves. I'm cool with that, Pat. To say that he can't guard anybody is full of shit. He's a 9-time defensive All-NBA defensive player. He can guard people. Sometimes I think Pat just wants to talk Pat things, okay? I was laughing the whole time, too. Because some of the stuff he said was complete facts. Our boy Jeff Crompton, who hates Chris Paul, is just like, yo, your boy Pat Bev is on First Take spitting nothing but facts. There was a lot of unfacts that he was spitting as well. I think what he said about Chris Paul manipulating like the refs and how he would have, like, he should have fouled out of the game. He was so strong in his point on that. Like, he should have fouled out. Look, and that's so true. The fouls on Brunson and what Patrick Beverley said about, dude, if that was me, we're going to replay. I'm getting ejected or it's a flagrant one. And that is so true. So I thought it was a hilarious interview. If you haven't watched it, it's great, man. It is so Patrick Beverley. It's great. And I think all these outlets want him now. You know, after the wearing the Versace or the Gucci robe and a glass of wine when he was talking, I think it was Taylor Rooks or whoever he was talking to that one day. It was classic, but I also think it was full of shit. And he got a lot of, I think Dame Lillard tweeted at him like, yo, this guy is crazy for saying this. I think he was putting a lot of disrespect on CP's name, right? And if anybody liked seeing Chris Paul fail, I think it was Patrick Beverley the most.
First, surprised that ESPN would greenlight the Pat Beverley day of Pat Bev's and all the shows. What do you mean, why not? We know exactly why not. Why in his entirety of his career would he never ever be allowed on ESPN or any of these shows? And now all of a sudden it's just like, let's roll out the red carpet. Pat Bev's hitting everything. He's going First Take. He's doing all the morning sports centers. He's going to be playing defense against somebody. But you know, now they're going to have him back a lot. He's going to go to Fox. He's going to go to Barstool. Like he's going to hit all of the avenues for sports talk that he can. And he is entertaining, right? Say nothing more about it. The first thing you would say is entertaining, hilarious. He's completely unafraid of any sort of repercussions of anything he says, clearly, because he was just stating whatever he
said. I'm telling you guys my truth, and I think 1,000% he is.
And I do not disagree. I 100% agree with that. And I'm here for it. I would love to have him give his opinion in certain matters all the time. I would love it. I would love for him to be a contributor in his own, like if he decides to do the podcast thing or if he wants to be on ESPN or whatever. Maybe he's setting himself up for retirement, which he's not going to retire anytime soon because he's still playing great. But I think I'm not going to say it any better than Matt Barnes did when he addressed the comments that Pat Bev made about Chris Paul. And I believe that was on the new version of The Jump for ESPN, whatever they call it now, whatever their NBA show is called, NBA Today, probably. And he just said it very plainly. He goes, you can be critical of Chris Paul, and that's all fine. He played like shit, and Chris Paul will admit that. But to say that he can't defend when he's, you know, a 12-time All-Star, a 9-time defensive player, all defensive team, it's just bullshit. So yeah, maybe right now at 37, he's a little bit more cone-ish than he has been in his previous years. But who isn't? Who isn't a little bit more like a cone by the time?
I'm a full cone.
Exactly. I'm reaching. If you're too far away, you're going right by me. I'm not even sliding over. So I get it, and it's clear that Pat Bev has some sort of beef. I mean, he was a part of the trade for Chris Paul, right?
Yeah.
And my guess is Pat Beverley has looked at Chris Paul as, you know, a guy that he wants to compare himself to and try to beat every single time.
Well, that's
been shown out every time that they've had a matchup against one another. And then the last thing that I remember him doing as a member of the Clippers is shoving Chris Paul in the back as they exited the playoffs from last year. So again, this seems a bit personal.
Yeah, there's beef, dude. Oh, there's 100% beef. Cook the beef. It's all there. I just think the funny part about this is Phoenix loses last night And I think immediately Pat Bev had a couple glasses of wine, called his agent and said, hey, I'll fly in tomorrow. Yeah, I'm free tomorrow. I got nothing. Let me hop on there. I got all morning if you want me to have Chris Paul.
Oh, my God.
Because somebody's got to do it. So it's a great interview to watch. Again, I think he believes all of the things that he said. And some of them I think were spot on. But other ones, real basketball people like Matt Barnes and like you and I who know basketball and the average person could just see bullshit through what he was saying about CP. So anyways, we've run long enough. Next time we get on, we're going to have game ones done from the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Screenshot, record, let us know when you're listening to the show. We're going to be back soon, y'all. It's the follow through with Clips and Drew, and we're ghosts. You know what it is.